This is Jennifer Dupre interviewing Bertha Faith, July 26, 1989. Okay, it's on.
I am Bertha Faith, Bertha Bossiker Faith. I was born in Grand Haven, April 9, 1905. I am now 84 years old.
Okay. Have you lived here all your life?
I've lived in Grand Haven the biggest share of my life, only a few months in northern Michigan when my husband was working up there.
Okay. Where were your parents from?
My father was born in Coburg, Germany in 1877, and he came over here by himself when he was 16 years old.
And he came directly to Grand Haven?
I don't know. That's one thing I don't know. How he happened to land in Grand Haven. I wish now that I did know those things, but he died when I was 13, and consequently a lot of questions that I would like to ask him now I can't.
I see. And how about your mother?
My mother was born in Agnew, Michigan, which is just 6 miles south of Grand Haven. She was born in a large family, and she was the second oldest of the large family. Her name was Henrietta Podine. My father was August Bossiker.
Do you know how they met?
No, I really don't know how they met, but I have an idea. My mother worked at the Cutler House at one time, and I don't know whether they might have, whether my dad worked there too at one time and they met there, or how they did meet. I wish I knew that too.
And then after they were married, where did they live?
They were married in October 1901, and that was the only time that my father returned to Germany, because they went over there on their honeymoon. They stayed in Germany visiting the relatives for 6 months and came back to Grand Haven penniless. They had spent all their money there, and they had to come back to Grand Haven and start out from scratch, which they did.
I see. What kind of work did they do?
My father was a carpenter and a builder and a contractor. Probably he learned his trade in Germany before he came over at 16, because I don't know where he would have learned it here, unless Captain Walker, who he lived with for some time, may have taught him some of the trade. But he built so many cottages in Highland Park that he really knew his trade as a very young man.
Okay. And did your mother continue to work in the Cutler House? Or?
Not after they were married. She just was a home builder then. Soon after they were married, he had the pavilion called August Pavilion, where the Bilmar Beach Hotel now stands. Mm-hmm. And in that pavilion, they sold, it was an ice cream parlor. They sold ice cream and candies. And there was also a dance hall where the condominiums are.
And father owned this? Or?
Yes, it was my father's. And they had name bands that came on weekends, and the resorters who came to the Highland Park were at the dances almost every weekend, and I think sometimes on Wednesday nights they also had dances. It was a very popular place. I guess I mentioned it was called August Pavilion.
This was in the early 1900s?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I never heard of that.
Before 1910.
Okay.
He sold it about 1910 or 1911. That's when my sister and I entered kindergarten.
Okay. What are your earliest memories of the pavilion?
Well, at the time that my father had the pavilion, people came in the summertime, and they rented their swimsuit, their bathing suits, they were called, uh-huh, because of the style of the suits. All of the suits had short sleeves and skirts attached to them for the ladies, and even the men had a panel all the way around, like sort of like a skirt, but with straight pants. But the women even wore stockings to go into the water. They were called bathing suits because they were strictly for bathing and not swimming. In my day, it was not popular to have a suntan. The people kept their skin white, and they carried parasols down when they were out in the sun so that they would not tan. Therefore, most of their bodies were covered up most of the time.
Ah, that's why. And this was in when you were about four?
Even when I was older.
Oh, and they rented these suits?
They rented the suits. They would cut. There was a bathhouse. There were bathhouses that looked like army barracks. And they had separate rooms that locked. And people would rent a suit and a towel. And they were given a key. And then they would go to a certain one of these booths and change their clothes and leave the basket in there until they got through it on the beach, and then they'd come back and get dressed and return the basket, and then they were laundered, ready for the next batch. But my sister and I used to get nice-looking bathing suits because the fellow who came down to sell the suits to my father would give us sample suits, and they were quite out of the ordinary. Really pretty wool suits with white trimming and white pearl buttons down the front. Quite unusual.
Did you keep any of those?
No, I wish I had them, but I still remember them.
And your father was also the head of this renting.
Mm-hmm. He started the build. I don't know just when he started building the cottages, but he died in 1919, mm-hmm. The row of cottages behind my house on Crescent Hill are cottages that he built. Okay. I don't remember just how many, but quite a few of them around the whole ridge were built by him. For people in St. Louis, Missouri, and Chicago, and different places. And that was in the early years of the resort, too, when he started building. He also built the house where Dr. Alguire lives on Lake Avenue, right around the corner, we call it Hatton's Corner, Dr. Robertson's Corner now. Mm. It's the house that has the wall, sort of like brick coming down to it, right around the corner. He built that for Susan Yerkes, who was teaching at Akeley Hall, the girls' school.
Where did you live?
We lived on Lake Avenue at 1308, where the Lee Memorial Chapel now stands. That was our home.
Okay.
My mother and dad owned all the property around where I live now. This was 5 acres, and they sold, after I was married, they sold this part of it, a lot and a half, to my husband and I. Mm-hmm. And they also owned property across the street, where my sister and brother now live.
Okay. And this is quite a family area then.
Yes, it was. It's settled here.
Could you tell me, you were talking about how the gypsies came to the pavilion?
Oh, every year gypsies came into Grand Haven. And, of course, we always knew the stories about gypsies stealing little children and horses and everything. And, of course, this was in the horse and buggy age anyway when I was young. And when we knew the gypsies were coming to town, they always came out to the lake too. And when my mother and aunt saw them coming, they would stick my sister and I under the showcases so that the gypsies wouldn't see us. But we still remember that, being hustled down there and being scared to death until the police used to come and chase them out of town.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. And I remember even after I was in junior or senior high, they still came. And that's after my father died, and my mother had a miniature golf course across the street from here. And they would come to the door, and they'd say, "Well, I want you to get me some money. It's in that drawer in your bedroom." Knew exactly where her money was and everything. I don't know. They were just like crystal ball. Mm-hmm. What do you call them?
I see. They would steal from you?
Well, they'd steal every chance they got, but they never stole from us because if you're aware of their tactics, then you knew how to get rid of them.
Oh, okay.
But each time...
And they would come every summer.
They came every summer for a long time, but I don't know, finally, evidently, they didn't come this far anymore. I don't know just where, I don't know if they're still gypsies or not, but it was a common thing when I was a young child.
What were they like?
Well, dressed like nomads, you know, wanderers.
Were they dirty, or?
Yes, because, you know, they lived off the street, you might say.
Did they have a horse and buggy?
A horse and buggy, that's how they came.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they had like a caravan.
Mm-hmm. And they'd have a whole family, you know, a whole group of them came together, all their children and everything.
They
want money to feed their children, you know.
So they would not just steal, then they would bag, bag too?
They'd want to get money to buy things before they left. And I don't know where they went from here, but anyway, when they're chased out, they had to go elsewhere.
Yeah. Were they traditionally dark-skinned?
Dark-skinned.
Okay. And how did the police chase them out? Did they just tell them they better leave?
Well, evidently they followed them until they got outside the city limits.
Oh.
That's my belief now, that that's the way they got rid of them, because they could have gone ducked down a street, you know, and still been in the city, but evidently they escorted them out of town.
What other stories do you remember about Grand Haven when you were really young? Did you ever get to watch any of the dances that your dad had?
Oh, yes. Because the pavilion was all open to outsiders, you know. You could go down on the big porch that was all around the whole pavilion, and that was open for spectators. Until my dad sold it, then the man who bought it boarded up the viewing area so that nobody could look in at the dancers, and resorters didn't like that a little bit because they were used to it the other way, you know. No, we used to go down there and watch the dances, and that once in a while there would be a movie on Saturday nights too, and my sister and I would get to go to the movie.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you started kindergarten. What school did you go to?
Went to Central School for kindergarten in first grade, first, second, and fourth grade. My sister Edna and I went to the Columbus Street School. You've heard of that.
Yeah.
And third grade we were at Central. I don't know whether the Columbus Street was just used for overflow or what, but we enjoyed our years down at that Columbus Street School. It was more fun being there. And but then from after we left the fourth grade, all the rest of our years were spent in Grand Haven at the school on 6th Street until that school burned. And well, we went all through school in the old building, and except our senior year, they built a new high school which faced 7th Street, and we spent our senior year in that school. That was graduating in 1923, and I never dreamed when I graduated that I would be teaching in the school that I had attended to the biggest share of my life. Mm-hmm. But I went to West after I got through school. I stayed at home the first couple of years. My sister went to college and got her a life certificate. And then
how'd she go to?
Western.
Okay.
Western. It was Western. I don't know the name of it then. It's changed names so many times, but it was a normal school. And then when I was there, it was a teacher's college, Western State Teacher's College, but now it's a university. But after she returned, I went to school and got my life certificate, and I got it in 1927. And my first 2 years of teaching were in Saugatuck, Michigan. Then after that, I decided I thought I'd want to take a commercial course, and my mother thought otherwise. She had paid for 2 years of college to get a teacher's certificate, so I went back to Western planning to get my degree, And I went 1 year when my friends asked me to go to the appointment office with them. And I filled out applications, for job applications, never thinking that I'd get called. And they call you out of your classes for interviews when they come from different cities. Well, my first, I had three interviews, Jackson, Saginaw, and the third one was Lansing. And by that time, the man I married was at Michigan State College, and he was also from Grand Haven, Jake Face. And I thought, well, it would be nice to be able to teach there. And when Lansing interviewed me, they wanted contracts signed that the day they interviewed. And I did that without consulting my mother. But then I taught there for 3 years before we were married, because Jake graduated from Michigan State in 1932, and we were married November 9th, 1933. But I had a wonderful time at Michigan State because Jake was on the varsity football team, and I could go to all the games free of charge, and mm-hmm. also go to all the nice parties that were on the campus, like the military ball, because he was a reserve officer in the reserve officer because he took that military training course, and we got to go to it, and fraternity parties, and it was a lot of
fun.
Was
he in a fraternity? Or
yes, it was a Olympic fraternity. It was a fraternity for the athletes. I think it's now a national fraternity, but I don't know what the name of it went national afterwards. Michigan State was never in the Big Ten when my husband was there, but he had always wished before he died that it would be a member of the Big Ten. And I think it was the year after he died that it became one of the Big Ten schools.
Wow, that's really incredible. What did your husband major in?
He majored in physical education and never did any coaching afterwards, because this was at the end of the Depression. There were no jobs. Yeah, our life after we were married was very difficult because jobs were not easy to come by. And his parents were in the commercial fishing business, and that also wasn't good anymore at that time. And so he just kept on trying and trying to get work. And it seemed to me that the first job he found, he got 20 cents an hour, but he took it so we could at least buy groceries. And
and you were married by then?
We were married then, yes.
Okay.
And
were you still working at Lansing?
No. I quit teaching because this was in Grand Haven.
Oh.
But when we were first married, we lived on $10 a week. And before I retired from school teaching, some of my children carried more money than that in their pockets for spending money. And when I tell them we lived on $10 a week, they couldn't believe it. But $10 was $10 in those days, too. It wasn't, the dollar was a dollar, and it wasn't devalued like it is today.
Can we go back to when you were still in high school and elementary school? What did you do in the summertime for recreation?
Well, our sister and I spent a lot of time at home because business my mother and dad were in took place in the summertime, because the rental and the rental of cottages, and the people came for 3 months from the 15th of June till the 15th of September, and when they were both out working or showing people cottages, somebody had to be at home to answer the door. So my sister and I spent a lot of time at home, but we couldn't go down to the beach and spend the afternoon swimming like many of our friends did. But we didn't resent that, because we knew that was our livelihood, you know, the resort business. And so, evenings we entertained ourselves with our friends, and we'd go for long walks. People did a lot of walking in our day because we didn't have cars to run around in, and a long walk around the Oval or the State Park that it is today. It was an oval at that time. And we used to just enjoy walking around and meeting friends and then coming. You spent an hour or a couple hours. We didn't go to movies very often. Well, we lived out a mile from town, and it wasn't as easy to get to movies like other children. Nice. But we were never bored, I must say, because we always could find things to do.
Entertain yourself.
Entertain ourselves. We never...
Did you do a lot of reading?
We read a lot. I still do that all the time.
Something you never stop doing.
I do more reading now than I did when I was teaching, because I didn't have that much time. But I read all the time now.
What would you do in the wintertime?
Oh, in the wintertime we had lots of fun, especially when we were in high school.
Well, how would you get to school?
Walk.
You would walk, okay.
Walk. And let me say that in the wintertime, many times we'd leave for school before a snowplow came out our way. And the snowplow at that time was horse-drawn with a V-shaped plow that would only make one track. And the snow could be a foot or so high, and we would walk, make our own tracks. And oftentimes, if a rubber or something came off our feet, we didn't have boots, we had rubbers with leggings. If a rubber came off, we'd discover that it had come off, and we'd have to retrace our steps to get it and find it in the snowbank and put it back on. Sometimes we'd get to school with wet feet. But our clothing, too, was different than what you have here. But I was going to say, we did loads of walking. But then...
How long would it take you to get to school?
Well, not too long, maybe 20, 25 minutes. We walked right along, carrying all our books, not in bags or anything. We just carried them in our arms. And evening entertainment in the winter was fun because some people had great big toboggans. They were sleds that carried 18 to 20 people, and there was a Second Street hill was iced on the on the left-hand side all the way down from Second Street Hill to the railroad tracks beyond Jackson Street. And right after school, fellows would go out to ice the hill, pour water on the hill and let it freeze. And grown-ups, loads of grown-ups went, not just school kids, but grown-ups. And when you went on the toboggan, I don't know if it's called a toboggan or a bobsled, it was a bobsled, the driver of it sat in the front, and the next person was right behind him, and each person held the legs of the one behind them, because there weren't footrests or anything. You just held on to the other person's legs. And, it was fun. You went very fast. At that time, there was an interurban that ran from Grand Rapids to Grand Haven and went right down the middle of Washington Street. And they had a watchman watch there because they didn't want any accidents. You know, nobody run into the bobsled as it was coming down the hill. In order to have a second ride, you had to help pull the sled up the hill, which was a long haul from way down to the railroad tracks back up to the hill. But these entertainments everybody enjoyed.
Got your fully. Exercise.
Well, we really got our exercise. It was fun. On Sundays, very common place to meet your friends was out on the icebergs on the lake. And we'd go almost every Sunday and walk for a long spell on the icebergs and meet all our friends out there. And then we'd go home and make candy or popcorn or something. And that was the way we entertained ourselves. I mean, it took a long time. I mean, the walking alone took a long time. Now people can't go places unless they get into an automobile. But we did. I can remember many, many Saturdays going down from our house three times in a day. We'd go down in the morning and then go way down to Ferry School where the football game was held in the afternoon. And then at night our parents would go into town and we'd go the third time. So that would be like covering maybe 6-8 miles a day. We did that so many times.
Do you remember anything particularly about school, about high school, or?
Yes, I'll tell you one thing. In high school, my sister and I took a lit course, and we took 4 years of English, 4 years of Latin, 2 years of French, three years of history, algebra, geometry, all solids. I think our whole 4 years, we only had one or two electives. And I'm so happy now that I had all that Latin, because it's helped me so much in my English word pronunciation and so forth. It really has been a big help. And, we had a good time in high school. I always enjoyed every minute of it. We had class parties, but we had no gymnasium. We had no place to hold them, so we rented a place in the Catholic school for the parties that were given by our classes.
St. Pat?
Yes, St. Oh, Pat. Okay. And until a high school was built that had a gymnasium in it, but for a long time we didn't have any gymnasium, and so there was no place to hold dances or anything like that. And that's why they rented this place from St. Pat. But when we graduated, we didn't have a prom. It was called a junior-senior reception. And that was held, ours was held in Spring Lake. And it was a dinner put on for the juniors, and the juniors put it on for the seniors. And it was a nice affair. Everybody was dressed up, but not quite like they do for the proms, but the girls all had special dresses for it and everything. And it was a very nice affair. But the proms came afterwards, long after I was out of high school. But
Where did you have it in Spring Lake?
I don't remember the name of the building, but the building is still standing there. I think it's the corner where the street light is. It's down a block south, right on the corner. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't remember what, I don't was, know if it was a Masonic building or what.
Was there a it wasn't a restaurant then?
It was just a building where you could have it catered in. Yeah, it was a nice place.
How did the juniors make their money to put on this prom?
That I really don't. I don't know. Well, we used to have candy sales and stuff. That was one thing that went on in the school quite often. At certain days, there would be candy sales. But other than that, I really don't know what they did to raise money. I don't remember.
Okay.
But as I said, I don't. When I went through school, I never dreamed that I would come to Grand Haven to teach. And I guess I should tell you that happened when my husband entered World War II. Shortly before that time, I was asked to substitute at Ferry School for a girl who had a nervous breakdown. And I substituted on a month-to-month basis, because they never knew whether she'd be back the next month or not. And I had substituted for 6 months straight. And at the end of that time, the superintendent said he had a regular job for me if I wanted it, which I took. And I was glad to have it when my husband went off to war, because the children were small, but they were both in school. And it took up a lot of time. And after he came back from the service, he came back in 45, and he died in January 49, 2 days after his birthday. And because I was teaching then, there was no doubt what I was going to do after his death, because I already had a job and felt very fortunate that I could continue, and which I did until I retired in 1970. after having taught in all 31 years. And I enjoyed my teaching work very much. I taught fifth grade the majority of the time. I think I only taught sixth grade 1 year while I was in Grand Haven. All the other years were fifth grade, which was my, I call it my pet age group because I liked the children of that age. They were very nice to handle. I had, discipline was no problem because they were not quite babies and they weren't quite grown up, but they were just an excellent age to work with. And I enjoyed every minute of my teaching. And it was lots of hard work, but fun too. And one thing I tried to make a habit of doing while I was teaching, and that is to observe things that were different that the children would come to school. If they came to school with a new dress or a new pair of pants, I'd remark about it, and everybody likes to be complimented on something, and it always made a difference with the children if you saw a change in them or something, you know, and and they likewise were complimentary. If they liked something I did, they'd tell me. But it was, I enjoyed my years in Grand Haven very much, teaching school.
After you graduated from high school, did you go directly to college?
No, I stayed home with my mother for a couple of years while my sister was there.
Oh, that's...
And mainly because my father wasn't with us, you know, he died so young. And
was this during the Prohibition?
Yes.
What do you remember about the Prohibition? Any particular memories, or was it just kind of...
Well, during the Prohibition, you just couldn't get any liquor of any kind, that's all. But people made their own. People made their own wines, which was, well, I guess it was not uncommon before. People used to make their own wines all the time, and they continued to do that just so they didn't get caught.
I see.
Also, I lived through the Big Depression, and that, of course, I told you that was at that... Shortly before we were married. All the while I taught in Lansing, we were in the Great Depression.
I want to ask you a few more questions about the 1920s first.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
No, I forgot what I was going to ask. How did the Grand Haven, the Tri-Cities area, react to the Prohibition? Was there any fuss about it or anything like that?
No, not a fuss, but there were, I guess they called them blind pigeons. There were places where people could go out in the country where people made it, and you could go out there, and if you didn't get caught, you always had to do it secretively. Mm-hmm. And when I went to Detroit to visit my relatives and my husband's relatives, the one uncle of my husband's took us to several places. He said he wanted to show us both types of places, and it was scary. I didn't
enjoy it?
No, I didn't enjoy it very much, you know, because you always thought, well, I hope nobody comes and picks us up. Well, and it was surprising to see how they made the liquor and the wines and stuff. But
and then
we weren't very big drinkers, so anyway, we saw what the places were like.
And then, what year was it that women were allowed to vote? That was 1920 or 22?
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
I think ever since I've become of age, I've voted every year. Yeah.
What was the age? 21?
21.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. And then, what year did you start college?
I started college in 25 and went till 27. Then I went back for a year in 1930.
When did you meet your husband?
Well, he went all through Grand Haven High School like I did, but he was... I graduated before he did, I knew him all the way through high school just because he was a football and basketball player, but I never formally met him during that time. We started going together when I was in college. A friend of mine got us together.
Okay.
And she was Henry Coyman from the shoe store. It was his wife. She was a good friend of my sister's and I. Well, we all graduated from high school together. And she's the one who got Jake and I to go together. And this was shortly before he went to Michigan State. So.
Okay. How did you, you lived at, on the Western campus, though, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. I stayed on campus. I was on campus for 3 years. And then had to finish my degree after Jake died, and when I went back to the school to find out about the courses I needed for graduation, they told me that since I had spent 3 years on campus, I could finish my senior year by extension and correspondence, which I did. It was hard work, but it took me 5 years because I was teaching at the same time. But I finished it, and I got my degree in 1953, same year my daughter graduated from high school.
Oh, really? And how did you get back and forth to college? Did you have a car by this time?
No, you went by bus or by train station and take the train to Kalamazoo or go all the way to Kalamazoo by bus.
Was the Interurban still running at that time?
No, no, not then.
Okay. Do you remember about how much it would cost to take the bus?
No, but it wasn't very much because our tuition at school was a pittance compared to what it is today. Probably like a dollar and a half or $2. I don't think it was much more than that.
Okay.
Some of those things I wish I had observe more closely. I wish I knew too what our tuition was. We had three terms then, and it was so much per term, and then we were home during the summertime. Mm-hmm. But for us it was a lot of money because we didn't have a lot of money. But I compared to what people have to pay today, it was a small amount.
All right. And then after you started working, you went to Saugatuck first, right?
Saugatuck first.
And then you went back to Western.
And I went to Western for another year, and then I taught in Lansing for 3 years before I was married in 1933.
And when you were married, did you come directly back to Grand Haven?
Back to Grand Haven.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Back to Grand Haven.
And this was during the Depression.
Yes. Then Jake got a job with the Civilian Conservation Corps as an educational advisor because he had graduated from college. And his job took him to Marquette, Michigan. No, Munising, Michigan. And he went up ahead of me. We had only been married a few months when he got this job. And he went up in March. And in May, I went up there and stayed at a rooming house for a while. And then we rented a log cabin, which was on a place called Lost Lake in Munising. And it was a very pretty place, but just made of logs, and it was very, very old, and it had cracks in it, and you'd wake up in the morning, and there could be a little chipmunk in the room with you, and if you just lay still, it wouldn't bother you, it'd go back out again, but it would, these were all places that were built for just summer people. You know, people, and the, we were friends of the foresters, and they came to supply the trees for the CCC camps, and that was the work that they did in the summertime. And because they and their families all lived around this lake. It was why we decided to live there too for the summer. And it was fun. It was a different experience. You had to use a pump to pump water, and you had a wood stove. Yeah, it's the only, no electricity, no heat. You had to start the stove with wood in order to have any food. It was very, very antique. But we enjoyed it. It was different than camping in a tent.
Okay.
But we liked it. Then at the close of that summer, I was pregnant, so I came home, and Jake didn't. He still had the job, and his job. Let's see. He stayed on for several months because I came home in September and Donna was born in April, and he was still working there then, but he came home after she was born. There was only one train a day. You couldn't get out of there either. It wasn't a place. It took about 14 to 16 hours to drive by car. The cars didn't have the speed they have today.
Yeah.
You had to go across the streets in order to get there, and that was a setback too, because it took an hour on the ferry across, and that one train a day and was the only means of coming back. So I called Jake when I went to the hospital, and he got home the next morning, but Donna was already here by that time.
Uh-huh.
And then he came out of the CC's, I think, at the close of that summer. And that's when we stayed in Grand Haven for the rest of the time.
Okay.
Then our son Jack was born 5 years later, April 4th, 1940. And Donna now is Donna Burnside. She lives in Spring Lake, and her husband is Dan, who has a Burnside Manufacturing Company. And my son Jack is in Northridge, California, and he has his own business of decorative hardware, and he now is in Germany till the end of this week.
Oh, nice.
Just got back from Alaska with a fishing trip. But he travels all over the world for his industry that he's in.
Oh, it's a nice industry to be in.
He's doing very well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you remember about the Depression? I mean, what were
the Depression was very, very difficult because, well, one thing I remember, you didn't have to lament too much because everybody was in the same boat. Nobody had money. And things were very scarce. You had to be very careful what you used. You know, you had to conserve everything. You couldn't waste. You had to be, you didn't waste food or anything because you didn't have money to buy it. When the Depression started, the banks closed, and I was at Western, and I called my mother, and I said, do you have any money? And she said, nope, it's all in the bank, and the bank is closed. But that was just until it was closed for a couple of days before it opened again, and then that was all right. But Depression was a very difficult time to live under. Food was scarce. Clothing, you took care of what you wore because you didn't have the money to buy.
Did you continue to go to college?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, and at college it was difficult too because you had to watch every penny.
Yeah.
And as I said, everything was tight. And well, another thing that was hard to live during World War II. It was also a difficult time because we had rationing, and you bought shoes with stamps, you bought butter with stamps, you bought sugar with stamps, and there's certain things that you, that the stamps were used for. Gasoline was purchased with stamps. You could only have so many for a certain number of days, and so nobody could use over that amount, because otherwise you just walked, you know. But that was also very difficult. But we all got along. I mean, we didn't suffer because of it. We all lived through it. However, we have talked many times that it would be very difficult for children to live through a depression like we did, because children today are used to so much. We weren't used to that much in the beginning, and it came at a time when things weren't as plentiful as they are today. So it was a little... But as I said, we survived, and we're still around to talk about it.
And your children were born in the kind of the tail end of it?
Well, I don't right know. It was about over by the time Donna and Jack were born. And but then the war came soon after Jack was born. He was born in 40, and the war started in 41. My husband left in 42, and he was gone for 4 years. And I was here with the two small children. And that's when Donna was hard on shoes, and when Jake would get an extra stamp in camp, where he had stamps to spare, he'd send them home to me so I could buy her an extra pair of shoes.
Nice.
That's the way we got along. But
where was he stationed?
He was in Alabama, and then he was at Fort Benning, Georgia. He didn't get out of the country because he developed stomach ulcers,
mm-hmm.
and then they wouldn't send him over. He wanted to go overseas, but they wouldn't send anybody who had anything
yeah.
wrong. He
yeah.
still had the ulcers when the war ended, and was in the hospital at the time. He never was too well after he came back either. He was always bothered with trouble with his stomach. Anything else I can tell you?
Well, we can go on to the 50s. Then your daughter graduated.
She didn't graduate from Michigan State because she met Dan Burnside when she was still in high school, and he was only here for 1 year, then he went to military school, but they kept in touch, and then he was in the service. Don't know just where he was stationed. I think he was in Germany or Italy, and when he came back from the service, he came back, I don't know, in December, and they decided to get married in February. So they were married in February 4th, 1956. And they have four children. The first two were twins, Bruce and David, and Brian and Darcy. And David lives in David lives in Grand Rapids. And Bruce and Brian and Darcy are in Spring Lake.
Okay.
And Jack moved to California the year that I retired from school teaching in 1970.
Okay.
And I've been retired now for 19 years. And he went out there taking a job which he had with Carl Ranking, who was a well-known man in Spring Lake. And after he was out there a while, he decided that he would like to buy the business from Carl, which he did before Carl, quite a while before Carl died. And he was always, he said that he, at some time in his life he wanted to have his own business and kept working at it till he finally
achieved
his goal. And he has five boys. Jake, John, Trevor, Cameron, and Brandon. And they range in age from 25 to 13. And the middle one is in college. This summer he's in a college in San Diego, I guess. And he's in his third year. And the other two boys are still in grade school, in junior high.
Sounds like my family. Mm-hmm. There's five in my family. The oldest is 23 and the youngest is 11. So mm-hmm. pretty close.
Well, as I said, Jack travels all over. He has one product all over the United States now, and that takes him from one end of, from California to New York several times a year. So he goes back and forth many times.
I'd like to ask you, what differences in Grand Haven, and especially the high school, did you recognize after, compared to your high school years to your sons and daughters' high school years?
Well, you see, when we went through high school, we had, at first, there was no gymnasium. So we had no gym classes. It was strictly all study. And when they were in high school, they had more chances to participate in other sports. Especially, I remember, with Donna too, but with Jack, they had a swimming pool and they could take swimming. See, we had none of that. It was strictly study, as I said, and hardly any extras. We did have sewing and cooking, and we took both of those, but not that we liked them, but we took them.
Yeah.
But Jack took, and he had a heart ailment, so he couldn't participate in sports. But he managed to swim. He was a manager of the swim team. I mean. And so he could go along to the meets and everything. And he also belonged to the rifle team in Grand Haven. And Kenneth King was teaching rifle at that time, the one that Jack enjoyed working with because he knew so much about rifles. And that was Jack's first love.
Oh.
I didn't like guns, but he did.
Yeah.
That was the one thing. I mean, they had opportunities to do things that we couldn't do because of having no gymnasium. When we did have a gym our senior year, it was the first year, you see, so we didn't have as much opportunity as what the kids do today.
How do you feel the society changed, the kids in general? You were teaching at that time also, weren't you? So you knew from the teacher's perspective.
Well, of course, automobiles came into, you know, the automobiles changed from the horse and buggy days. And all the while I taught, I had a car and came to school with a car. And instead of walking, you know, like we did all through high school, we didn't have a car until we graduated from high school. So all through school, we walked. And when I see the parking lot full of cars today, I wonder why they don't walk to school like we did, and they wouldn't have quite the problems they have if the ones who lived in town would walk to and from school, but they won't do that, you see, because they have other means of transportation.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the other classes are concerned, Donna and Jack both played in the band, and we didn't have band either. Not too much that I remember in our high school. Probably was one, but I don't remember it. But Donna was a drum major of the band when she was in high school, and Jack played a French horn and Donna played a clarinet. And there, you know, that was another thing they could participate in that we didn't. And we took music lessons, but that was piano. But now they have so many chances to do instrument and have specialized training in things like that. There are so many more things that are specialized today that were not in my day.
Mm-hmm.
And but they have dropped, I don't know if they're taking Latin back in again, but they dropped Latin. We were so glad we had it, but they might have it now, but I guess they do have a little Spanish or French, but...
In Grand Haven, they don't
mm-hmm.
have...
Well, they didn't have
that
after...
That is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But
they didn't... it was hard, but we worked at it. We really had to, in order to stay through for... We had a large class when we started out as a freshman, but by the time we took Virgil our senior year, there were very few of us left.
People dropped out
mm-hmm.
and got jobs?
They dropped off.
Did you use slates?
Pardon?
Did you use slates to write on, or did you have paper
no.
by then?
No, we had paper.
Not that perfect.
Slates were used before. Oh, we always had slates at home that we could use, you know, when we played school at home, we had slates.
Oh,
but,
okay.
Yeah. No, we had slate boards in school, you know,
yeah.
to write on. But, and they were better to write on than the kind of boards they have today, because the real slate was good to write on, it was easy to clean. But some of the boards that we had when I was teaching were not that easy to clean.
Did you have any favorite stores or anything like that that you would go to?
Oh, yes, we had... one thing we did when we were in high school, they used to have hat stores, just places where they sold hats. And if we had time after school on our way home, we'd be walking with some of our friends and they'd say, well, let's go to Gene Yock's hat store and try on hats. And we'd go there and try on hats and stand behind them, laugh at one another. And she thought we were... We came in to buy hats, and we had no intention of buying any. We just went for the to try them on, and that was one place where we'd stop. And we used to always stop at Catherine Ekins was a good friend of ours, Catherine Olson now, but her father had a grocery store in town, and we would stop there on our way home from school and call up her mother to find out if there were any groceries that she wanted us to bring home, and that was another one of our stops. And there weren't any hangouts, I mean, if that's what you mean. They're not real hangouts where we went. And, you know, if we went, it was to somebody's home. We'd go to the dress shop, or we'd go... There was an Addison Walsh dry goods store and Beaudry's dry goods store. The Beaudry's was where Oaks's insurance company is now, and Addison Walsh's where Steckity's is. And then there was another one across the street from Steckity's. I should remember that, the name of it, but I just can't recall right now what it was. But Balls. It was a Balls store. And they had, they would have everything from yard goods to thumbtacks. Stuff like that, you know, that you could buy in those places. And there were meat markets where you go just to buy meat, well, like Sheffield's today. But Kinkema's Meat Market was right on Washington Street, in the area where Coyman's Shoes is. It was right in that area. And we'd stop there at night and pick up meat to go home. And, of course, everybody knew everybody else, and Mr. Kinkema knew us. He could call us by name because we were in there so much, and our parents traded there. And I was going to say, going back to my very early days, if you don't mind my retracing my steps,
not at all.
We grew up beginning with no refrigeration, no electric lights, no indoor plumbing, and all these things came into existence after we were born. I can remember the first night when my dad had electric lights in our home, and they were just, at that time when they were first put in, you pulled a string to turn the light on. It's just a long electric line that went down from the ceiling, and it had a chain on it, and you pulled that. What's such a delight to have electricity instead of kerosene lamps or candles. And at first we had just a pump in the kitchen, but then when indoor plumbing came, it was such a relief to be able to take a bath in a bathtub and have inside plumbing instead of having to run outside. All those things that children can't imagine, those things today. Well, if you camp, you can't. Well, even camping sites have inside plumbing today, but everything was far-fetched in our day. I mean, people had to work to get everything they had. We didn't have refrigeration. We had ice boxes, and a man would come around. Well, they cut the ice, great big chunks of ice, out of Spring Lake and kept them in ice houses with sawdust around the ice to keep it from melting. And then a man would come around in the summer and sell ice from house to house and deliver it out to the lake. And they'd have ice tongs that carry, where they'd carry chunks 50 pounds or 100 pounds, and they'd carry them up all the steps to the cottages. People put signs in their houses telling how many pounds of ice they'd want, and they would be put in these in these ice boxes. And your food only was kept real cold the first day the ice was put in, and then gradually the temperature would decrease until he came back again. But that's the way we kept food in those days. Mm. People, I'm sure, had to use a lot of smoked foods in those days to keep it from spoiling. And of course they used a lot of salt too, because salt also kept things from spoiling, meats especially. But it was so different, because
what were the holidays like?
Lots of fun. People made a lot of the holidays. Christmas was always a big time at our home. We all had Christmas trees, but they were not, Christmas trees did not have electric lights, of course, but they had candles that fit in little holders placed on the end of every limb. And at our home, they were only lit on Christmas night, because you had to watch very carefully to make sure nothing burned. In churches too, we had the same thing happen in our church. We'd have a big tree, and the candles were lit on Christmas Eve when they had the church program. And the janitor would have a big stick with a wet rag on it, and would keep walking around the tree to make sure that nothing burned. But and we had presents and everything like they have today. But one thing that I remember was the Christmas cards that we used to get from our grandparents in Germany. They were so different from the cards today. They are one. I think one thing that used to catch my eye, because they had so much glitter on them, and they came through the mail without the glitter falling off, and you know, just a regular postcard, but they were so different that we always looked forward to those. But my mother used to do an awful lot of baking for Christmas, for the holidays. She was an excellent cook and baker, and cookies, she'd make loads of cookies weeks before, all different kinds, and it was a big treat.
Did you go caroling?
Yeah, I sang in the church choir, and our church choir went caroling to the homes of the sick, and then we'd end up at the superintendent, the Sunday school superintendent's home, where we'd have a big feed afterwards. We always looked forward to that because it was so nice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we did caroling, and it was a big time.
How about Halloween? What did you do on Halloween?
One thing I remember about Halloween, they always wanted to encourage the children not to be destructive. And the city made a big promise the one year that if they found no vandalism after Halloween, they promised the children a swimming pool. But we kept our side of the promise, but we never got the swimming pool. The city never built it.
Really?
But that was the big promise that one year. We never got it.
But the next year, you didn't listen to any promise?
No, but we, well, again, living out a mile from town, we didn't get into the Halloween pranks that a lot of other people did.
But you didn't go trick-or-treating?
We didn't in our, not where we live. Don't remember trick-or-treating at all in my childhood days.
So it's mostly just pranks.
Mm-hmm. Well, my mother and dad used to tell about things that they did out in the farm, like taking a wagon apart and putting it on top of a roof of a house and putting it all together again and things like that. But they really did those things, too. Well, when I taught school in Saugatuck, that's when we used to do the pranks, because of the one fellow that was teaching and lived at the same place, roomed at the same place where I did, decided that we should play a trick on the superintendent. And so we did. We blocked his doorway during the night so that he'd be late for school the next morning.
Was he?
I don't think he ever realized who did it, but it was his own group of teachers. There weren't very many teachers because Saugatuck was a small place.
He probably thought some students did it.
I imagine he thought students did it, but it was his own teachers who did it.
Okay. What about other holidays such as the 4th of July or Easter?
4th of July, I can remember that more fireworks. See, it wasn't unlawful to shoot them at that time. And our cousins used to come down from Grand Rapids, and they'd have all kinds of firecrackers and everything. We shot them around the houses and everything, you know, the little ones and different types that were, well, harmless.
Did Grand Haven, the city itself, put on any sort of
fire? I don't remember having a display, but people at the resort used to buy the, what do they call them? The kind of like they have at the for the 4th of July now and for the Coast Guard.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're called.
Those that go way up into the air and then burst. Well, anyway, they had, some of the resorters would buy those, and you go down to the point and watch them, and they'd go way up over the lake. They were pretty, but yes, we had fireworks. We had a lot of, because it wasn't unlawful to shoot them in those days. But there were accidents. People had parties. Like I remember, one girl got very badly burned at the Spring Lake Country Club one year because of fireworks carelessly used. And so every once in a while, accidents like that happen. I'm trying to think of other.
What about Memorial Day? They have a parade.
Memorial Day was observed by everybody, all the school children. And when we were in school, we were marked absent if we didn't march on Memorial Day. It was our duty. And we did it religiously all through high school. We wouldn't think. Some of the people, some of the high schoolers didn't go, but they, as I said, they were marked absent if they didn't. And so we did that all the way through. And we'd meet in front of the school on 6th Street and march from there down to the hotel corner of Washington and Harbor now. But it was a nice parade, and we all carried flags and were proud of it. that was one of the holidays that was strictly observed when I was, until I graduated from high school. People made a lot of it. And then picnicked afterwards, and, you know, people would come out to the lake, and they'd go to the cemetery. They always had a, they used to march, some of them marched all the way out to the cemetery where they had the soldiers' graves, and then, they still have a memorial service for the soldiers, but not like they did in my day. I think there was more of an observance then, and people made more of it than they do today, I think. They still march, but children don't march anymore, I don't think, not unless there are a few who do, I don't know. But they don't.
Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts?
Yes, I guess they do.
Yeah. How about family traditions? Are there any particular family traditions in your, you know, that you remember that you still carry on? Or are they mostly based around the holidays?
Well, probably mostly around the holidays. Like we always opened our gifts on Christmas Eve mm-hmm. instead of Christmas morning. When we were very young, then of course we waited until Christmas morning to come down and see our gifts. But otherwise, Christmas Eve, and we still carry on that tradition today. And of course, my parents have been gone for a long time now. My mother died in 1969, and of course, baking, still carry on a little bit of that. My mother did a lot of that for holidays, and I still do that. I don't know how long I'll carry that out, because it gets harder and harder every year. But, of course, I don't go on picnics or anything like that. We didn't go on many picnics anyway because of the work which my parents did, which took up most of the summer, you see. And so we had more things going on in the wintertime than we did in the summer because in the summer we were busy.
Yeah.
Okay. But as I said, we enjoyed it. We got to know the people at the resort so well because they'd come in the middle of June and stay till the middle of September. When they owned a cottage or they rented a cottage, they'd come for the whole summer. And these were very wealthy people from Missouri and Chicago and Beverly Hills, California, and different places. And our family got to know them like old friends because the same people came back year after year. And so we looked forward to them coming back every year, and it was always sad when they left in September. But after Labor Day, it was always so quiet around here that we hated it. We were always glad that school was starting then because we missed the people so much after they went back to their own places. But it was the resort has always been a lively place, and it's always been home to me because I've lived here all my life.
Are there any particular memories that you would like to share of any time in your life?
Well,
or stories.
We didn't do an awful lot of traveling, but I will have to mention that the summer before my husband died, when he had 2 weeks vacation, and as I said, because of depression and everything, we didn't go on many vacations, but we had saved up our money for this vacation, and we took a trip with the children up into Canada. And first we were going to get our own meals at campsites on the way, and that only lasted a day. And my husband said, well, if you keep that up, you won't have any vacation because you're doing all the cooking. So then we decided we'd go out to eat, and we had a very nice time just riding around in Canada. We went up quite far and we stayed at motel. Well, I don't know if they were called motels then, but anyway, there were. At one place we had a large cottage, and that was nice. And it was always fun to go other places because I had spent so much time around Grand Haven. So that was the nice vacation that I remembered, and we. And I think the children enjoyed it too. We had a new car that year, and it was nice traveling in it. And because that was the last vacation we had all together. And another thing that I remember before my father died was that he always took us to Berlin Fair. Mm. And took us out of school so we could go to Fair in Marne.
Was it still called Berlin? Or
it was called the Berlin Fair then.
But how about Marne? When did Marne change its name?
Well, that was during the war.
Okay.
Because it was Berlin, and Berlin was a German city, you see, and that's when that changed to Marne. But, we had a lot of fun going there, and the vacations that we took many times were in the spring or in the fall. And we used to enjoy going out to our grandmother's place out in Agnew, where my mother was born. We'd take the train out to Agnew and then get off the train, and we'd have to walk along the railroad track 1 mile to get back to my grandmother's house. So everywhere we went, it was a chore to get places. But when we get to my grandmother, she always had a favorite rice dessert ready for us when she knew we were coming, because she knew how we liked it. And we used to have family parties that were a lot of fun in the winter time. For holidays, my mother always invited many people. We always had a large table full of people, even though there were only, after my father died, there was just my sister and brother and I and my mother. And our table was always set for about 16 or 18 people, because my mother would invite some of our relatives and even people, friends who lived around, to come for holiday meals. And we always enjoyed that because she was doing things for other people all the time.
How about the Grand Haven area? How do you feel about the area?
Grand Haven has changed very, very much since I was a young girl. I like what they have done to the waterfront now, because in my early days there were great big coal piles, and of course the big boats docked. Came into Grand Haven and docked where the on the corner, well, in the area where the museum is, and that building across from the museum is where the docks were, and that's where the farmers would come in and unload crates of berries and produce that were sent to Chicago and other places. The beauty that we see now, especially when you come in on a boat and see the green grass and all the buildings along the riverfront that have been made so for our enjoyment, I would say, and for great improvement over what it used to be. Another thing they used to have on the lake, on the riverfront, was the reels, where the fishermen would come in and dock along. Just down from where the Dance Crow is, and they'd have their fishing reels, and they would be the great big fish nets that they'd bring in with their schools of fish, and the nets had to be put over these reels. I can't just explain how they were, but it was like a big wheel would go around, and these nets would go over the reel to dry, and the nets had bobbers on them, so that they, you know, so that they could see where they were when they, after the nets were set out and way out in Lake Michigan. And of course that was another site that it was just there when we were children, and it had to be because that was the business, you know, as a fisherman. But all of that has been changed now with all the, it's changed from cool sites to beautiful sites, I would say. And I know any place where you ride in Spring Lake too, the scenery is so pretty. They've tried to make it so much more beautiful than, of course, in our day, the things that we thought there were things that were beautiful to us then would not be beautiful to people today. So that's one change. And the buildings, keeping the fronts of the buildings up so that they invite people, I think is another improvement in Grand Haven. I think Grand Haven's tried very hard to keep the town looking good for other people to see. I think people enjoy coming here for that reason.
Well, how about you?
Oh, I enjoy it.
Are you glad you lived here most of your life?
I don't think I'd want to live anywhere else. I go to California every year, but I'm always glad to get back home. My son wouldn't come back here to live because he's made his home out there, and he said he'd never come back here to live, but he does enjoy it when he comes back here. He loves the lake so that's what I think the beauty of the lake. I never get tired of looking at it, and the sunsets especially are a sight for anybody to behold, I think. And, you know, as I said, I like to go to other places. Now, my daughter and her husband have a condo in Florida, and we go there too. But always glad to get back here. It's cooler here than in most places.
Oh yeah, because of the breezes over the
years. And especially here on my porch, I have I'm delighted to be able to sit out there. I've never been sick of Grand Haven. I have lived through 4 wars, through a depression, and, well, I was born at the beginning of the century, and now we're getting to near the close of the century, so I have really seen an awful lot in my 84 years.
I think you certainly have, yeah. And that you remember it so vividly.
Well, I thank the Lord I still can remember it. But that's why I'm writing my family history now, so that while I still remember it, I can still do it, and I'm glad that I'm able to do it.
It's impressive, yeah. Well, is there anything else you think that wraps it up for you?
Well, let's see if I can think of anything else. Oh, I might add something about that pavilion that my father had. He used to rent canoes to people, and every summer he would have a pier that he would extend from the pavilion. That would be like where the Bilmar is, and a boardwalk would go out to the water's edge, and he built a wooden pier that extended out like probably close to a block out into the lake, and boats could come in and dock there. Not very big boats, but at least people who had boats, and if they came in with their canoes, they could get out of their canoes there too. But he rented canoes, and that was an interesting thing for people to have, and many of them brought their own canoes if they had them too. And well, those days that down at the beach, that's when we, even though I was just so young, I just remember so many of our friends down there, and what a good time we had. And just the ice cream and candy. I mean, didn't have to have liquor or anything like that in order to have a good time. And even coffee wasn't even served on cool days because, you know, people weren't the coffee drinkers that they are today, I guess. When they had the dances down at the pavilion, when intermission time came, then the people would flock into the pavilion and have an ice cream soda or a sundae and before they went back for the second half of the dance. And that's why the business flourished during those days. I didn't mention the trolley car that ran out there. Maybe you've heard of that. But there was a trolley car, an open car, that ran from the corner of 3rd and Washington Street along the same track that the Interurban used and went to Stickney Ridge and back.
Is that called the dummy?
The dummy.
Oh, okay.
The dummy, or the trolley, we call it the trolley car. And it had benches that were reversible, and when the car would get to 3rd and Washington Street, the conductor of the car would turn all the benches heading out toward the lake, and you'd face toward the lake going out there, and then when you get to Stickney Ridge, he'd turn them all the other way and reverse them. On rainy days, there were side curtains put on this trolley. It was an open-air car, and on rainy days, there were side curtains used, and sometimes when my mother and dad were busy, and the trolley car wasn't so busy, the fellow would let my sister and I ride back and forth to town on it several times a day. That was fun. But we could be entertained very simply in those days and have fun, where today I feel the difference is that young people want to be entertained. We never had to be entertained. We could entertain ourselves. And I mean, when I hear that cry in Grand Haven about there isn't anything for the young people to do, if they'd use their heads and make some entertainment for themselves, I think they could get along a lot better. We didn't have drugs or anything like that, no liquor, no drugs, and everybody enjoyed themselves. I know they did from the atmosphere in the high school, too. I mean, it was enjoyable. And I'll mention one other thing in high school. When we were freshmen in high school, one of the fellows in our class wrote a song for our freshman class. And that's something I don't hear today that they do. And we had a song, the Grand Haven High School song, that I haven't heard for years, but I still know what some of the words are. And so every time we had an assembly before a football game, we'd sing the high school song, and I think somebody in high school at one time wrote that song too, and it was very typical of everything in Grand Haven. It's very nice. So, but those are some of the things that are different in the school now, because doing special things for special classes. I don't know, Jennifer, if there's anything else I can tell you.
I think that's pretty good.
I've always lived in this neighborhood, and right now my brother lives across the street, and my sister lives in the red house right kitty corner. And my aunt used to live directly across the street, but she died several years ago. But her daughter lives three houses west of me toward the lake, and so this is sort of a
very close family.
Close neighborhood. I mean, but we have a nice neighborhood, very nice people across the street, and a young couple with a little 4-year-old, and very nice to old people. So, I've enjoyed very much talking to you. I think I've talked a blue streak.
Well, it's good. No, there's an awful lot in here that's great. You know, it just most people don't remember back that far. They lived. A lot of people I've talked to, they lived during it, but they don't remember it, or they don't really think it's important to talk about, and they won't talk about it.
Well, my first tape that I made, I read to this cousin who lives up here three houses from me, and she said, oh my goodness. She said, you did remember an awful lot of stuff. She, her mother was from my mother's side of the family, you see, and she said, my, you got an awful lot of history in there. And that's all the things that I remember. And she said, well, you remember an awful lot. And one thing, I was named after her mother. Her mother was Bertha Schultz, and I was named after her. And she said, you know, when I was younger, I used to be jealous of you. And I said, jealous of me? Why? Because my mother paid so much attention to you all the time. Mother didn't. She did to her too. But her mother and I were very close because we lived right across the street from one another. We were very close. And as long as I can remember, her mother lived with my mother and dad because she came in and worked in Grand Haven. Well, she worked for my mother and dad at the pavilion. And, of course, all of her life she was around me, you see. So that's why we were so close. But I didn't think there was any jealousy between the daughter. So, sure. I mean, you can, if when you put this together there's something you want to ask me, feel free to.
Okay.
Be glad to.
Okay. All right.
Some of it might be, you might want to cut out some of it.
Oh, yeah. That all? Is there anything?
Well, can you think of anything else?
I think we've pretty much covered everything. Mm-hmm. You know, aside from what church did you go to?
Oh, St. Paul. That's what I'd like to include. I have been a lifelong member of St. Paul's United Church of Christ. It was first the Evangelical Church, and then the name was changed to Evangelical and Reformed. And then when the Congregational Church joined our church, they decided to name it the United Church of Christ. So I have, and I am a member of it now. My church work has been always my first love. I have, in 1936, when a new minister came into our church, he got me interested in working for the church, and I was the first woman deacon and the first woman elder in St. Paul's Church. And I've always been very proud of the fact that I was the first one. And no women had ever taken an office like that before. And I was on the church council several times after that. And in fact, I am still on the Christian Education Committee, and they met here at my house last night. And I work closely with the minister. I do the friendship pads every Sunday and take care of the guest list in the church. And I've done that for many years and do as many things as I am asked to. And I'm on the... we have a prayer group in the church, and I'm on that, a member of that group, and belong to the Ruth Circle, and attend church every Sunday that I'm able to. Miss very few during the year, except when I'm out of town. Now, that has been very much a part of my life. That and my school teaching have always meant so much to me. Yeah, that's one thing I have to do in this other paper that I'm writing, because difficult writing it. I've got so many pages already. That
oh, really?
Well, I think I'm on about the 15th or on both sides of notebook paper. Mm-hmm. Something comes to mind and I
jot it down.
If I can think of any of those things. If you want to shut that off, I could get. People came by train or car ferries to the resort, and this was because it was long before airplanes were used for transportation. When coming by boat, the livery wagons drawn by horses
would meet the boats at the dock, and the dock was where the in the area where the Historical Society is today, and they would meet the livery wagons would meet the boats there, and take the trunks off the boats and transport them to the cottages. And they sometimes the cottages would have like 50 to 100 steps, but the livery men would put the trunks on their backs and climb all the stairs to get the trunks up to the cottages. There, keep in mind that at this time there were no paved roads. Everything was sand. So that's one thing I thought I might...
Okay.
Our clothing was also different than what people wear today. There were no boots, like winter boots like we wear. I think I explained before that we wore rubbers. But we wore long underwear, which we hated. And over the long underwear, we